originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, you know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Pope Jude, he goes by that too. We are with you once again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. This is, of course, the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening worldwide on our website with our free live streaming available at horseracingradio.net. And as always, tuned in throughout North America on Sirius XM satellite radio. That's Sirius 219 XM 206. Welcome to the program and excited to spend an hour with our special guest here tonight. JT, we talk about it all the time and we say it quite often at the beginning of this program that one of the neat things about Trainer Talk is that we get to visit not only with the names like Bob Baffert and Todd Pletcher and Steve Asmussen, but every once in a while, we get to spend some time with somebody who's just getting started with their career. And who knows, one day we might be talking about one of those individuals being in the same category as somebody like a Bob Baffert or a Steve Asmussen.
Yeah, well, everybody has a shot when they get started. And, you know, some people get lucky with clients and stuff and have a meteoric rise. And other people just have a lovely career waking up every morning and hanging out with horses. But it doesn't really matter in the end. It's just if you love what you do, then you never work a day in your life.
People that tune in regularly, they know that you spent about 20 years in California training horses. And I've always maintained that if you stayed in the game, we'd be talking about you with Bob Baffert and Steve Asmussen and Todd Pletcher.
Well, that's very flattering. I hope you were right. But yeah, you know, life throws curveballs at you sometimes and you have to do different things and sometimes reinvent yourself. And I had to do that. But, you know, I've got a great life. I was actually thinking as I was driving over here, you know, how satisfying my life currently is. You know, that's all you can ask for, really.
Is it true that nobody was happier to see you hang up your shingle than Bob Baffert?
yeah, he was happy. He was definitely happy. It was really just one horse that I had.
He actually misses your racetrack laugh. He's told us that.
I hear that frequently, yeah. But, you know, sometimes sometimes Bob would get a little angry with me. But I tried to work with him, like loaning him my saddle towel so people would work with his horses out of the gate. So, anyway, we always had a good time. He's a great guy.
Really cool and a lot of fun, and looking forward to the visit here tonight. So without further ado, tonight's guest is a native of Trinidad. Now, he's a retired jockey, so he follows in the footsteps of names like Wayne Catalano and Wesley Ward and Art Sherman, Alan Sherman, as people who have made that transition from riding races now to training horses, and it's worked very well for them. Likely going to work very well for our special guest here tonight. That is former jockey, now trainer, Anthony Stephen, who joins us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Anthony, welcome, my friend. Happy to have you on board.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me on board.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was getting ready for the show, and I went back and caught part of the show that you did with us back in September of 2015. You came into the HRN studios. We sat down for a full hour, but that was on our Jock Talk show, and we talked about your riding career. So I'm really excited to hear about making that transition and, you know, how it all comes about and some of the things that you learned on the riding side that are helping you train horses. So looking forward to the visit.
Well, I enjoy it because, I mean, nothing really changed, really, because I still get to gallop my horses and breeze them and really get to know them. And it makes it easier to tell the jocks, you know, how their running styles are. And, you know, I just like to be a one-on-one with these horses. And, I mean, sometimes it's hard when I'm watching the race. I'm like, I can do the weight. You know, this is like the lightest I've been in my whole career. And it's hard for me to not be in the race. But I enjoy it because, you know, I get to really watch the other side of it. And, yeah, maybe in time I will let go of the eagerness of being on their back, you know.
We've done some shows with Herb McCauley, who's a very successful rider for many years, and he gets like that when he's doing the shows with us.
Yeah,
right.
The fans won't hear him on the air because the race is being broadcast, but he'll go, "What's that jock doing? Oh my God, I wish I was riding this horse."
Yeah, exactly.
Do you do that a lot?
I just started. I run, I think, about 5 horses so far, and there was one horse particularly I asked the jock to watch the replays because he's always first or second out the gate. You know, I mean, I rode him in the race and I won on him also. And he's aggressive, you know, and they went in 26:51 and I was like, what are you doing? She's running fifth and fighting the horse. And so that was the only one time I was like, what are you doing? Let the horse run his race, you know?
Well, you know how these jocks are, Anthony. You know,
trainer does
all the work, gets them ready. You give a leg up to the jockey, and then forget about it. It's all out of your hands.
Well, it's hard, you know. I mean, when that gate's open, I mean, a trainer can tell a jockey 9 different instructions, and you know, a horse stumble leaving the gate or throws his head up in the air. So I leave it up to them, really. But this one particular horse, he goes out there like a madman, and I would have been happy. I told him he's gonna run out of horse today, but let him run his race because for 3 weeks we just been shed rowing. You know, the track's been horrible with the weather.
Well, you know, we've also had jockeys turn trainers like yourself that say one of the best things is they know all the BS lines that a jockey gives when he
right.
comes back. So you're not as susceptible to that stuff as a trainer like myself who spent most of his time on the ground. So how does that work out for you? Do guys try to tell you something that you know definitely is not true?
Yeah, like for example, you know, getting off a horse and, oh man, I love this horse, I want to ride him back. And meanwhile, they're telling the agent, don't put me on that horse. Yeah, for example, last week, when I ran this horse, he ran out of horse. You know, he was, like I said, not fit and anything like that. But the second start, I was, like, so sure this horse was going to be in the money. And he just got beat by a head. But the agent was like, well, I'm kind of committed with the rider you want, but I got another rider. You can ride him if you want. I'm like, I don't care who ride it. This is a better horse this week, you know? And he got beat just by a short head. So, yeah, when I don't know, to take the call and then always some crap like that.
Yeah.
Is there any rule against a trainer riding his horse in the afternoon her horse?
No, you can, a trainer can ride. But they can only ride their own horses, in other words.
Yeah, if you own the horse.
Yeah, okay. I think if you're just training, but you can't ride anybody else's horse. You couldn't say like if Shug McGahee called you and asked to ride
right.
his horse, you couldn't ride that horse. You only have to ride the horses that you train.
Yeah, it would be a bad sign if you took off your own horse.
Hey, I tried that in Finland. I tried that in Finland because my wife owned half share of one horse we got. And I was still riding at the time. But the owner, who owned the other half, he's from Louisiana. And his dream is to get a picture with Calvin Borrell. So I told him, I said, this horse don't belong at Keeneland. But I don't care if we finish last. I just want him to wear my silks and, you know, take a picture with him. So I was like, okay. So I named Calvin on the horse that my wife owned half share. And I took another call in the race.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, but they made the switch at the office. They said, "What? Is he crazy?"
Yeah, he could. Calvin could have put on the silks and taken a picture with them for nothing.
Right, exactly.
Would have saved a lot of aggravation for everybody.
I know.
Well, talking with former jockey, now trainer, Anthony Steven here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, Anthony, walk us back through the timeline here and how this all came about. When did you make the decision to finally make that move from riding horses to training, and where are you based, all that kind of good stuff? Take us through the particulars.
Well, I mean, I had a great year last year. I mean, I've been riding in the smaller tracks, you know, Belterra and Mountain Air. They're shipping in with some of the horses that I had on my farm, and I got involved with Henry Bernard Armstrong, and we kind of got a band together at the training center. So he had four stalls, I had five, and we started working together. And we had nothing but success. You know, I had, you know, really high percentage last year. And my weight, you know, was naturally because I was doing a lot of work on the farm and at the track. So it was comfortable riding. So the deal was I was just going to ride our horses and his horse and let's have fun with that. And then it expanded to Tracy Young, throwing me a bone, but it was all live horses. So I started enjoying it again because I hate to lose. And, you know, when I leave it up to an agent, they, you know, put me on horses you don't really want to ride. And that's why I can tell when the jockeys don't want to ride a horse. But anyway, you know, I had a great year last year. And at the end, you know, I'm starting to ride some horses that I really didn't want to ride. You know, for example, at Greenland and Churchill. I hate being embarrassed, you know, a horse in the wrong race, but it's not my business to tell a trainer where to put his horse. I would never do that. So I would show up in the afternoon to ride the horse and finish him last by 20. I mean, it's just not what I want to do in my career. And then I started neglecting the horses that I was looking after. You know, time is running out. I have to finish up early to go to the track to ride other people's horses. So I sat down and I think about it because I got 4 2-year-olds at the farm that I was going to start breaking. And I realized I couldn't do it all. I couldn't be a jockey and give the horses the right care they needed. So it was easy for me to, I wouldn't say it was easy, but it was comfortable for me to say I'm burned out, I'm tired of going in the room and I can't give it my 100% when I got stuff to do. Like, I would ride a race, I would have to haul the horse back, you know, things like that. So I was doing it all, and it was tiring. So the decision was kind of easy for me to do.
And then since you made the decision, you mentioned sometimes you watch the race and you're thinking, man, I could do that, I want to be out there. Has it still been easy, or are you still fighting yourself a little bit on making that call?
I'm fighting myself because I don't have a weight problem. And most of the time, guys make a decision to quit riding is because of weight or some of the other reason they hurt or something like that. And my weight has been, you know, really, really good. Like I believe it's the work that I'm doing. I'm galloping my horses, I'm grooming them, I'm hot walking them. I'm just doing it all because I love it. And, you know, when I leg another rider up, I'm like, man, I can do the weight while I'm not riding. But I don't know. You need to talk to my wife about that.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you're living a much healthier lifestyle and you're feeling good and you're fit and all of that. And, you know, as you get older too, you know, it's important to take care of yourself, and you've been fortunate. Yeah. And I'm sure that's one of the things that your wife thinks about all the time. She doesn't want to lose you. So,
right. Well, she saw I had a fall in Keeneland, the horse stumbled leaving the gate, and it kind of gave a flashback what happened to me 2 years ago when I took a year off. I went to the massage school. I had a concussion, and, you know, she witnessed these two falls I had. So when the second one happened at Keeneland meet, the last meet that finished, she was like, that's it. I don't want to see you riding another horse again.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Anthony, because, you know, you and I have known each other for a while now. And when you when you did step away after that concussion and you started working on a second career, looking to be a masseuse, you went through all the training. I thought, okay, well, he's found something now. He's not coming back. And then all of a sudden I see you riding again. And it took me by surprise, too. So now that you stepped away again, you're looking at another career. Do you ever see yourself maybe coming back to riding, or do you think this might be it this time?
Well, I think what happened last time is, you know, I realized I have peace with the animals and the horses. The massage school, people just get me angry. Like, you know, you went to school to learn a technique and you're trying to help them and they always know better than you, you know? So I think I walked away from that career and went back into the riding because of galloping the horses and breezing them. I'm like, man, I want to ride this horse in a race, you know? It feels so good. But like I said, the busyness that I'm dealing with right now and all the decisions, dealing with the farm and the horses on the track, I don't think I can be comfortable in the room knowing somebody else is bringing this horse over. That was one of the problems I was having. It's not that I don't trust people. It's just like little things, the tongue tie look a bit too tight, the bit is too tight in the horse mouth. There's little things that upset me when the gates open, the horse is ranked because I think the bit was could have been a two-hole looser, you know? And it just makes me want to be involved with the horse, taking him to the race. I just feel more comfortable doing that right now. So I don't think I have the urge to ride, but maybe, you know, I might want to ride one of my own horses one day if I get the urge, like, whoa, it is a nice horse, you know? But I don't see it happening because I'm too occupied.
Yeah, well,
maybe you can just get a horse to the Derby and then take the jock off right before and you can hop on for the Derby ride.
Now you know how I feel.
Yeah, I always tell people, I used to hate taking guys off of bums. Right? I never wanted to take a guy off that was doing well, but I had clients that wanted to do that, and it's so hard. You know, you try to be, you know, square with people and and sometimes you know, the trainer's got to deal with the owner. I mean, the owner pays the bills and all of that, but
right,
you know, it's a tough line. I remember one time I had this horse that we bought in France, and he'd won 6 races in a row as a 2-year-old, but he never developed a jump. He didn't get any better from 2 to 3, so he was just kind of a very average horse. Ended up being, you know, like a 10 or 12 claimer. So this little girl from Canada, Lori Goulas, came down. She had the bug, and she did quite well on the horse. She won 3 races on him. And then Mickey Walls showed up from Canada, and the owner wanted to put Mickey Walls on the horse. So I said, why do you want to do that? You know. So, but we put him on. He got sick. So so the girl was in the room. Lori Goulas was in the room, and I said, you know, I'd like to put Lori back on if she'll ride the horse. And he says, well, yeah, you're right. He said, I never should have done that in the first place. See if Lori wants to ride. So I went to the girl's jocks room. I said, hey, Lori, I said, you know, you can tell me to stick this horse if you want to. I said, you probably should. But she rode the horse, and she won. And the horse paid I think, $13 or $14. The owner made a bunch of money, and he gave her a nice little tip after the race. He felt really badly about his behavior. So it all worked out good in the end. But, you know, when somebody's loyal to you and they want to help you with your stable and, you know, they do their best job all the time, it's really hard to take them off a horse.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the problem I'm having with that is, like, you know, for me, just stop riding. And even, you know, I mean, I have so much friends that are jockeys, and I wish I had a horse for each one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just when
they
check with you in the mornings, I'm like, man, I confirm with this rider already. It's just tough right now.
That's a great point, you know, and people don't think about that, and I'm sure that all of the other former riders who are now trainers have gone through that same process of trying to, you know, play the good guy with their friends and not, you know, alienate anybody or tick anybody off, and that has to be a major challenge of going out on your own, isn't it?
It is, definitely, because, they, you know, they check with you in the mornings, and you want to put them on the horse, but as soon as they touch a horse, they think they own this horse, you know? So it's like, no, I gallop my own horse, because I'm like, oh, man, I'm just, you know, feel bad that I already make a commitment with this horse already.
Well, how many horses do you have now, Anthony?
I got 7 in training, 5 runners and 2 babies, and I got 2 more on the farm that I need. They already broke. They need to come to the track also. So I'm trying to rotate the older horses that they all win 5 already. You know, last year they all win and year before. So they don't have any conditions left. So I'm kind of like, okay, I need to try to rotate the ones that already, you know, have no conditions and bring in the maidens and get them going.
Anthony,
so I'll have 9 runners, hopefully.
Got it. Anthony Stephen with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN. You touched on the massage school that you attended and graduated from when you went into your first retirement, Anthony. You're now putting that to good use, not so much with people, but with the horses. Tell me about that.
Yeah, definitely helped me to learn, you know, the body mechanics of humans, really. And, you know, I kind of integrated to the animals, and it definitely, you know, helped them in a sense to relax them. And, you know, a lot of couple horses that have a lot of muscle issue, you know, like simple thing as stretching them or warming them up before, you know, a lot of times you take things for granted. And I think a lot of the times people don't warm up the horses the way they should before a workout. And that's why a lot of horses bleed in or come up with tying up or they're sore after. So I learned a lot about, you know, with the humans, that you definitely got to stretch and warm up. And in that aspect, it really helped me with the horses.
Yeah, from what I understand, the human genome and the equine genome are pretty close. So there's a, you know, a big connection between the two. And I've seen unbelievable work with massage therapists and chiropractors on horses that, I mean, they totally have transformed a horse's mm-hmm. body right in front of you when they start right. working on them. And that's a great feeling when you know you're helping a horse so much.
Yeah, you can just see the eyes. It's like a release, and the way they breathe afterwards, and it's just like a whole, yeah, like you said, a transformation. It's really good.
Anthony, you mentioned some riders not necessarily warming up the horses enough before they work, and that could be one of the issues and one of the reasons for some of the problems that we see in the mornings. Take us through your routine of working with a horse and kind of walk us through bringing that horse into a work. How does it go for you?
Well, I'm kind of, you know, learned the old-fashioned way from being in the jockey school back home, and it have a lot to do with, you know, putting the saddle on and walking them in the shed row before the rider come. I see a lot of people with leg or a guy up straight from the stall, and he goes on the track and does his business. I like to put the saddle on, give them a couple turns in the shed row, get them settled down, leg the rider up, go a couple more turns, and then, you know, walk to the track, back them up to the cocker stand, and, you know, let them stand for a bit. But every horse is different, you know. You train every horse differently. But I kind of definitely want them to get the rider on their back and go to the track relaxed. That's my goal, is getting a horse to walk to the track and walk home. You know, I'll tell the rider, if you think you need to warm up more, it depends on how you feel under you, jog him a whole mile and, you know, then do what you need to do. I always give the option. Same when I leg up a rider race day, I said, stay with the pony with this one, but if you think you need to warm up, use your discretion and do what you got to do. But, yeah, honestly, my routine is definitely getting the horse settled down before he goes to the track. I think they run their races better, or they do their morning routines better when they go with a more calm personality.
How does a rider know if a horse needs a little extra warm-up before a race? What signs do you feel underneath you that tell you that?
You can feel, you know, they're going crabby, you know, like they're not stretching out properly. And some horses are a little girty, like you tighten the girth and, you know, they need time to stretch the skin out from under there. And, you know, you can just tell, like, you know, you might tell the pony, I know the trainer says stay with the pony, but I need to warm this up a bit. He's just not stretching out properly. And then you get comfortable and the pony comes back. You can tell. You can tell when a horse is just crabby and needs a little more jogging or galloping a little bit.
Yeah, even like a horse that has some little issue, like a knee issue or whatever, mm-hmm. like you warm them up a little bit more and they're better out of the gate and everything. It's a lot like a human runner. I mean, you can't go like from sitting on your couch to the starting blocks and expect to run any good, you know. So it's a process, and like you say, each horse is different. So what's good for one horse might be terrible for another one. I mean, oftentimes you'll see horses just walk to the gate, you know, because they just want to try to keep them as relaxed as they can or whatever. But I just think it's good to have a little leg stretcher at least before they run.
Mm-hmm. Anthony, how would you describe your overall training philosophy?
In what sense? Like,
yeah, I mean, your approach to training horses, if you were going to put it into words, how would you do it? Patient, aggressive, what would it be?
Oh, I'm definitely patient. Like, seriously, like, I got a horse here, it's almost a year, and he hasn't run yet. Like, I've just, like, the track is a bit frozen, I'm shed rowing, you know? I just taking my time, and I hate sending a horse out that I think it's going to embarrass me. Or if a horse needs a race, I would say, you know what, I'm going to let him run a race and get fit in the race. But if he's, like, far from running, I just can't do it. I'm just sitting and try to get them where I think I'm comfortable, that they're going to show me something. Even though they run down the lane running a good fifth, they finish a race. I hate a horse getting tired and backing up because it kind of teaches them a bad habit. So I think I'm definitely a patient person.
What you said, you were in jockey school at home in Trinidad, right?
Yeah.
And so was there like a little bit of training involvement with that too? Usually like jockey schools, you have to do everything from mucking stalls to riding the horses. So would you consider that like your first big background in horsemanship?
Definitely. They teach you in the school we had in Trinidad. We had a tutor from England, and you pretty much learn from the ground up. And, you know, most of the guys who's been in there, if you didn't make it as a jockey, there's a lot of them end up being a farrier, you know, trainers. They just, you know, have so much knowledge about horses from that school, not only just being a jockey. Now, you know, they have a program, not really a school, and it's so different to when I came out to the jockey school. You know, like a lot of guys going through the starting gates and a couple of trainers signed for them, and 2 months later, they ride in races, you know. No, back in my days, you learn all the basics, learn the structure of a horse, the anatomy, and that's simple things about the basic things you should know before you even get a leg up on a horse. So I really enjoy that.
Visiting with Anthony Stephen, who is just getting started with his training career. We're going to talk more about that in the second half of the program. Plus, we'll look back on some of his memories from riding races, not just here in North America, but all over the world. We're visiting with Anthony Stephen on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Stay with us right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale. Join us Florida Derby Week at the nation's premier destination for selected two-year-olds in training. From Kentucky Derby winner Nyquist to recent stars like Dreamtree, More Spirit, Audible, and Mopetism, Gulfstream grads are hotter than ever. This year's sale boasts quality from top to bottom and an under-tax show held over Gulfstream's dirt racetrack. Selected sales, superior results. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 28th. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Mike Pennant, Jude Feld, back with you on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy to have you back with us on Sirius 219 XM 206 and all of you tuning in worldwide at horseracingradio.net with our free live streaming. You can listen to us anytime we're on the air simply by clicking on the Listen Live button at the top of our homepage at horseracingradio.net. And don't forget that if you missed any portion of this program or any of our shows, all you have to do is head over to our website, check out the podcasts. They're available for you right after we finish each and every week. So head over there, listen at your leisure. So many shows that you can go back and listen to, not just our Trainer Talk show, but Jock Talk and our call-in shows and our weekend stake preview shows. A lot of different opportunities for you to tune in and listen to some great stories here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. JT, fun visit in the first half of the show with Anthony Steven. Looking forward to the second half. And you can tell he's somebody that's really taking advantage of the experience that he gained from riding horses. Now when he's training, he's using that experience and benefiting greatly from it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, everything in the horse business is about learning. Every day that you wake up, you learn something new. And he continues his education now as a trainer, but he has such a great background of, you know, the information that he learned at the jockey school when he was first starting out in the business, and then riding horses and dealing with trainers and all of that stuff and working on farms and breaking babies. And
yeah,
you know, he's got a tremendous background, so success should be his. Plus the work ethic, you listen to how much work he does and how he likes to be around the horses. That love of the animal is the common thing that most trainers have.
Anthony, if you could put your finger on the number one lesson that you've learned about training horses so far since being out on your own, what would it be?
I'll have to say it. My grandfather told me when I first told him I wanted to be involved in the horse racing world, he told me, is believe nothing you hear and little of what you see.
Good advice.
Because this business is always a rumor or always something going wrong. You know, it's a cutthroat business. And, you know, I try my best to mind my own business and be by myself, but there's always something going on in this business.
That's true. Pete Miller, the great trainer from California, his stepfather told me one time, always tell the truth on the racetrack because nobody will believe you anyway.
Right. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, so true. Anthony Steven here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Anthony, you've saddled a total of 9 starters so far. Still looking for that first victory, but no doubt it's going to come very, very soon. You've been close, though. 3 of your 9 runners have finished in the money, so the horses are running well. Describe that feeling now, sitting on the sideline, watching the horse come down the stretch with a shot to win. What's that like for you?
Definitely a drive. It's almost like I'm on the horse. You know, I mean, like I was telling you, the first few wasn't fit because of training issues we had. We couldn't really go to the track. So the ones that I really liked all performed, you know, and even though they didn't win, you know, came in first, I felt like I accomplished something. The fact that those were the ones I thought had a shot and they ran good. And even when I was riding horses, I would feel the same way. I would be happy with a finishing 5th than a horse backing up in the top of the lane. Like, you know, I feel like mission accomplished. Like, I got to run out of this horse. Yeah, the adrenaline kicking. I'm not on the horse, but honestly, I'm enjoying what I see. Like, you know, it's rewarding.
Yeah, and that's all you can ask for when you run a horse is that they give you their best effort. I mean, mm-hmm. There's only one winner in every race, but, you know, as long as your horse goes out there and tries puts in an effort commensurate with what you've done with them, that's all you can ask for anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
Are you superstitious at all, Anthony?
I would say yes.
So,
like, I know, like, in Canada when I was racing, I was one of the top riders in Fort Erie, and that year I was having a great year. I was riding live horses too, that helped. But one day my valet put on the wrong rubber band on my helmet. And I was like, what are you doing? No wonder I lose the race. It's not my lucky rubber band. And with the horses, it's the same way, you know, like, even though I'm paying a groom to help me to run the horse, take the horse up for me, I'm side by side, you know, I'm doing the tongue tie, I'm checking the bridle, and, you know, I'm just weird in that way. So I don't think if I have a big stable, I would be the one sitting in the grandstand and waiting for my horse, you know?
See, I think we're all like that. Jude knows I have my lucky pocket theory, where if I'm winning and my tickets are going into a certain pocket, I have to keep them in that pocket until I lose, right. And then I have to find another lucky pocket. a lucky pen theory, same thing. If I'm winning with a certain pen, I may use that pen for a month going to the races, that very same pen. And if I lose it, it's kind of a catastrophe. And same thing with a teller. If I'm using a certain teller and I keep winning, I have to go back to that same teller. I've even been known to walk into the racetrack the same way and use the same entrance every single time. That's how superstitious I am if I'm on a winning streak. I assume it's kind of that same thing. You said the rubber band, but I'm sure that there's other instances too where you've said, hey, look, I need to do things a certain way because I'm in a hot streak now.
Exactly. Yep, I believe in that, yeah.
Yeah, for some reason, it just seems to happen, right?
Well, I only have one superstition, and that's the song Horse with No Name. If I hear that, I don't bet on the day. Every time I've heard that going to the track, I've had to rip up a lot of tickets. So now I only play my own music if I'm driving to the racetrack or a station that I know that they will not be playing Horse with No Name.
Right.
Mike and I were at Gulfstream at the Florida Derby a few years ago, and some guy started singing that horse at breakfast time out of the blue, and I yelled at him to shut up, and he did. I felt so bad.
Anthony, what's the goal now moving forward? Do you see yourself getting clients where you can go to sales and pick out horses for them and start working with young horses, or are you going to do it more privately? Where do you see this whole thing going in the process?
Eventually, I would love to get some clients and expand, but to be honest with you, my hands are full right now with what I have, and I'm really enjoying that I can be one-on-one with the horses every day. And you know, the track closes at 11 o'clock, so you kind of want to make the track, and I want to gallop my own horses. If I'm breezing in company, well, then I would call a rider or something for help. But honestly, I want to be one-on-one with these horses, and I want to make sure I know how they feel, what's going on, who can do a little more tomorrow, or who can, you know, you got to take back a little bit with some of them. So if I get more horses, I don't know if I will really like it. Maybe I will if I get a good team under me, and it's really hard to find good people right now, like, you know, hard-working people, honest people, or who understand what's going on, rather than coming back, yep, he's fine. I mean, I've been working for people who I've seen it happen, and I say, hey, let me get on that horse tomorrow because I think the horse is off a little bit. And I would get on horse, and so said, so done. You know, he's a bit off. And so I can't deal with that. I need to get on a horse myself and see what's going on.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for quality over quantity. And I remember when you were riding, you would often take that same approach. You know, as you got more established and you were able to take that approach, you would say, hey, I want to ride good horses and not just get on the back of a horse just to ride a horse.
Right.
Yeah, same approach with the training side, too, for
and
Anthony
I think,
Steven.
You know what, it have a lot to do with, you know, in Trinidad, that's how it used to be. It was more, you know, you were a stable jockey. And I know in North America, it's different. They don't really have that. But we were kind of, I won't say contracted to a stable, but you kind of under the wings of that one trainer or owners. And you get on the horses in the morning, you break the babies, and you know, it's rewarding when those babies that you broke end up winning a grade one. You know, it's just amazing feeling. And knowing that you were the first person on the back. And, you know, I was telling my wife the other day that I remember a horse would have 20 starts and my name will be on that horse for 20 starts. So even though I made 10 mistakes, I get somewhere along the line to correct them and figure this horse out and ride him differently and discuss with the trainers. And that's one thing that I'm having problems with is when a rider ride a horse. I mean, I just started, but I've seen it with other trainers. And they know they make a mistake or they know something went wrong, because I've been in that situation where after a race, I'm already taking a Tums because my stomach is hurting. I know I'm screwed, you know, I'm getting fired. Like, you can tell. So what I don't like is when they don't check with you. They don't help you. Like, hey, this horse didn't handle the poly track. You know, this horse was a little bit off behind or something that can help you improve this horse. And I noticed that, like, they don't check with you for a week. So it's almost like you feel they're guilty of something, you know?
Guilty by association, yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, Trinidad has such a great history of racing, Santa Rosa Park and all that. And Mike and I, you know, we go to Barbados. We got a trip coming up again here soon. And The owners that come up from Trinidad are very proud of their horses. And they really seem to be super knowledgeable about the sport and enjoy it a lot. Talk about that racing there in Trinidad and how big it is for the people that live there.
Trinidad is racing is something you look forward to because it's only once a week, and maybe that's why, you know, people look forward to it. They're not bored of it. So, you know, like every Saturday or on a holiday, it might be a different day, like Monday, Tuesday, whatever. But you know, I remember my parents would be cooking the food and looking forward to drive the car up to the rails, park it there, and watch the racing. So, you know, once a week makes it special. And the fact that it's such a small country and we just, you know, we had three tracks before, but only one track would run like 3 months, and then they moved to another track. So it's something we all look forward to when it's happening.
Anthony, you told me when you joined us on our Jock Talk show in 2015 that your parents never really wanted you to become a jockey, but it worked out pretty well because you weren't only a jockey in Trinidad, you were the champion jockey in Trinidad, and it's taken you on a journey all over the world. Think back on some of those memories and some of the places you've been and share some of those favorite memories of yours from when you were riding races.
Well, I start off really blessed in this sport because when I was in the jockey school, one of the top trainers, you know, saw me galloping the riding school horses, and right away he signed for me, like he wanted to take me over. I live in his house. I started riding for him, and he's been the leading trainer every year. Like, he got 4 horses in every race. So, you know, he made me enjoy the sport from day one, and I was riding nothing but the best horses. I didn't really learn anything, you know, to be honest with you, because whatever he told me to do, I did, and I won. I started learning when I started traveling. And then, you know, it became tougher, but it was exciting because when I won among these top-class riders worldwide, it made me feel that, hey, I learned something from Trinidad. Even though I was on the best horses, I still understand what it was, you know, what I was doing. And traveling, I would give any jockey that advice. It really, really helped in this sport in general, not only being a jockey, but, you know, learning all the different styles and all the different equipment they use on horses. Like, you know, some trainers will put a D-bit on every horse. I hate a D-bit. I want to kill the guy who invented a D-bit. Because I can't get along with it. I always feel a horse is logging out with me. And maybe, you know, I don't know what's the word, but I hate it.
All right, wait. For the lay people out there like myself that never had a chance to train or ride a horse, what's a D-bit? Explain that.
The D-bit is basically shaped like a D, you know. But what it is, it
makes
has
sense.
A point. So when you pull on a horse, to me, it sticks them in the face. I never understand the concept of a D-bit. So I just don't get along with it.
Okay. Is it a common thing that trainers will use? Or?
I've seen it all the time. And
yeah.
I tell them, hey, just put a ring bit on this horse. You know? I swear, if I lose a race, oh, it's a bit.
I know what you're talking about now. Jude was kind enough to draw a picture for me here in the studio as you were describing it. So I do know what those are now. I didn't realize they were called D-bits, but I can picture the ring bit now, too.
It's kind of it's the most common bit, really.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, a lot of jocks would prefer to have a ring bit on their horse. It gives them a little bit more control. It just depends on the horse.
So why wouldn't you use a ring bit over a D bit if it gives you more control?
Well, some horses like them. The problem with D bits, I think, is they have that break in the middle of them. And sometimes if a jock pulls on them, that break will hit the top of their mouth and they don't like that.
Okay.
So you get something, you know, that's a little like a leather prong bit. Sometimes is good for those kind of horses because it's just a bar covered with leather and there's little prongs on the sides that they're actually just curved pieces of metal. They don't hurt the horse's cheeks, but they give you a little bit more control. Usually use that with like a figure eight or a nose band and, okay. But every horse is different and people don't realize like their mouths are a different shape. I always laugh when people say, well, how do you know one horse from the other? You know,
right.
It's like, how do you know your kid from the other? I mean, and you know, horses have, like, you'll see some horses have really narrow mouths and little tiny cheeks. And then you'll see other, you know, like a big strong colt or something have a big head and you know, and the bits, you have to find the right piece of equipment for each horse. So it's not cut and dry.
Yeah, the same with the feet, you know, like I like to pay attention how they eat, and some of them would leave back some feet and stuff like that. So there's this one particular filly, Woman of Love, I just bought. She's been picky on her feet, and I think the hallway feet had a bunch of molasses the last batch I got. And she was eating it really good before, but the new batch, somehow she's sniffing it and she's leaving. So I try, you know, a bunch of different food, and now all of a sudden she's cleaning up all her feet. And I was telling the girl who works for me, I was like, it's like, you know, people who don't like sushi, you try to tell them eat the sushi, it's good for you, but if you don't like it, you don't like it, you know. You just got to figure out the horse.
yeah that's it, you know, the molasses thing. Bobby Frankel used to not use sweet feed, like most trainers use sweet feed, but Bobby used to get molasses and then put the same amount of molasses in the feed every night, you know, and if a horse wasn't eating, maybe put more or less or whatever, so that you could control that. Just another way of controlling the horse's feed, because sometimes horses get really, really picky. So you have to do all those things. So it's a very entertaining business being a horse trainer, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. You cannot get bored in this business. It's amazing. You go home and scratch your head. And I was like, you know, one and a half of these trainers losing the hair on their head. They're pulling it off.
He's trainer Anthony Steven. He is with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. And as we told you, he spent many, many years riding all over the world, a highly successful rider, and now making that transition into training horses. And it's worked for many other former riders, and Anthony probably going to be no exception. As you can hear, he has a pretty good grasp on it with his horses that he has in his care right now. Anthony, you were talking about riding internationally and some of the moments that you've experienced. Go ahead and get back to that for a minute.
Well, it was an experience for sure. I mean, I've ride so many top riders, but one thing that stuck in my head, and I was telling some friends of mine about it, is a trainer from New Zealand. I was working for his stable. And he likes, you know, 15 to the furlong, and then he wants you to pick it up into 14s, finish up in 13s or 12s. So one day, you know, this horse was a bit rank when we start off, and he went 14, the first furlong. So I came back, and I was really happy with his horse. I was like, man, this horse feels really good, and I think he'll win his next start. The guy looked at me, and he says, how could I win races? I'm like, what do you mean? He said, I told you, go 15 to the furlong. You went 14. And I was like, whoa. Like, this guy was so particular about his timings and, you know, each furlong, what fraction you should go in. And I was like, but when you look at him, he's a leading trainer, like almost 3 years in a row. So little things like that, from traveling and being among different people from different countries, it really helped me be a better horseman, I believe.
Yeah, because there's so many things that you can learn, and even if it's something that's particular to a certain location or country or whatever, you can still keep that in your back pocket because someday you're going to need it, right?
Yep, definitely.
Anthony, earlier you were talking about the challenge of trying to find the right rider for your horses, and you're friends with so many of the riders that are in the room all over the country that it's hard. You don't want to alienate your friends, but there's only so many horses to go around, so that's a big challenge. I'm curious, though, when you were riding with these guys and girls, who was, if you hooked somebody in the stretch, who was the most difficult rider to get past if you both had the same type of horse?
Well, it's funny you would say that because I made a joke the other day. I rode Malcolm Franklin, who is a really aggressive rider. Like, he would ride a horse, kill the horse to the wire. That's how determined he is. I like his style of riding. So I rode him on, I think, my first runner at Turfway. And I told him in the paddock, I said, hey, it's because of you I quit riding, you know. And he was like, what do you mean? Because we had a ding-dong battle. I would say from the half a mile, we were locked head and head. He was on a two-year-old for Phil Sims. I was on a two-year-old for Kenny Cross. I was 50-1 on a sloppy track, and we just joined and made them move together, head and head, stride for stride down the lane, and I won by a short head. Mine was a first-time starter, 50-1, won the race. And after the race, was my wife horse, who I know was going to win. I've been getting on this horse. She loved the slop. I booked off. I could not ride the next race. So I asked Dean Silvers to ride the horse, and he won. I say, this horse loved the slop. She will win. But that's how tired this guy made me. And I'm, like I said, I was fit. I didn't have to lose weight. You know, I wasn't weak or anything, but just the fact it was a sloppy track, you know, you kind of have to support the horse more on a sloppy track. And this guy rode me to the wire. And I was like, when I leg him up, I said, yeah, remember that. Because of you, I quit.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Anthony Steven here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Anthony, last week we visited with Norm Cassie on this show, and he's much like you, just getting started with his career, albeit taking a much different path than what you're taking. And he talked about his fiance, Gabby Gaudette, who is the daughter of a trainer. She's in the racing business. And we talked about how important it is to have somebody like that that understands what it takes to be a horse trainer by your side if you're going to be successful. Your wife, Carla, she certainly understands it. She's been with you through the riding days, now the training days. Talk a little bit about having her with you by your side and how important that really is.
Definitely important, you know, having your other half understand what you're doing, and they understand. And the fact that she's a doctor, she knows a lot of stuff that she researches that, you know, I will be more the physical part, like how the horse feel under me, and you know, she'll be the researcher. So working as a team and understanding what she's telling me on the medical side, and me being on the back, you know, doing the performance side, I would say it definitely helped, you know, to go head and head and work together on it.
Yeah, that's kind of a unique relationship, huh?
Yeah.
Where did you guys meet?
We actually met in Canada. I was riding the Prince of Wales for Brian Lynch, and the owner's good friend stable, Rennie Douglas, they had horses with Larry DeMeritt, and she was the doctor of Larry's wife, who passed away now. She made the trip with them and met some of the owners that I actually got 2 two-year-olds for training for at the moment. So it was a kind of unique way that we met, because we all still really good friends, and I'm actually training for some of these owners too.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a great story. Yeah, and a great couple and a great fit. And, you know, Carla, just a wonderful person, beautiful person, and it's a great fit for those two. Anthony, we like to end these shows by playing a little game here. It's called Five Fast Facts to Know About Anthony Stevens. So I'm going to ask you five quick questions. You'll answer them very quickly, and then we'll be about at the end of the show. So you ready?
Yep.
All right. So we'll make it real easy. We'll start with the favorite country that you've ever ridden in was what?
I would say Macau.
All right. What are you going to have for your last meal?
Sushi.
What are you going to have for dessert with that meal?
Chocolate pudding.
All right. You're not training horses. What else are you doing when you're not around the barn training horses?
I'm playing with the dogs.
All right. And the one thing in your career you are most proud of is what?
Being who I am.
Wow. Doesn't get any better than that.
Great answer.
Yeah. Absolutely outstanding. He's Anthony Steven. He is a class act. He is a smart guy, and he is going to be one heck of a horse trainer. Anthony, can't thank you enough for spending the time with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. All the best moving forward, and we'll look forward to seeing you in the winner's circle for the first time very, very soon.
Thank you very much. I had fun today. Thank you.
All right, great stuff. He's Anthony Steven, and yeah, super smart. I've known him for a long time, and a really smart, heady rider. And now here's a guy that sounds like he gets it, right?
Yeah.
Making his transition.
Yeah, and I love the fact that he likes to be with the horses all the time. That's what it takes. The more you're with the horses, the better you do.
And I think if you take that approach, you can't lose.
No.
Right? You cannot lose if your first interest is to the horse.
Right. That's very admirable. Yep. and tough to do sometimes.
Yeah, great stuff. Anthony Steven here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Been a lot of fun having you with us. If you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton.